How do you feel about that whiskey?
It's smooth.
Does it taste like something else you really enjoy?
I'm not that good at things. Are you asking if it's E.H. Taylor?
It is essentially similar, like in the same vein, just younger than E.H. Taylor. Gotcha. Small batch.
I think that's why I like E.H. Taylor, because I like scotch because it has a flavor. Mm-hmm. And I like tequila because it has a flavor.
Do you think bourbon doesn't have a flavor?
It tastes like alcohol. Mm. I don't know.
Do you guys think our viewers are enjoying this content?
No, we're having a very intelligent discussion over here.
I think they are. I think it's great.
Welcome back to Switchcast, everybody. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, and Switchcast is the automotive-related podcast where we are searching for the truth and the humor in the car industry, as well as the smoothest-tasting bourbons. If it ain't true, it better be funny. That's right. Here at Switchcast, it is automotive wisdom with a side of sarcasm, or vice versa, depending on our weekly snark level. We got some great stuff to cover tonight. We appreciate you all being here with us. And if you have questions or comments, feel free to throw those in the flow of wherever you're watching live. And especially with tips, we prioritize things. We are a sellout here on this podcast.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, 100%.
We love the good reviews, especially, we love reviews if they're good, but money is a much better way to tell us. You don't have to leave a review, just send us money.
Yes.
It makes us feel warm and cozy. Makes us feel like we're not wasting our time. It's great. But if you can't do that, reviews are fine.
Anyway, before we lose anyone handing out the offering plate here, we're going to start out with news as we usually do. But we've got a few. We just got fun stuff tonight. We always do. Yeah, I don't need to sell it hard. I came across an article recently that my wife sent me, and it's not a new article. This is from 2022. We're not known for, you know, breaking news here other than recent Cannonball Records, but we are known for, well, our snarky take on said news. So that's what we're sticking with. But there's is an article from Landline, and it's called the Trooper in a Truck Initiative. And this was really headlined by the Illinois State Police, who are my co-driver, Cannonball co-driver Arnie Toman, is friends with and supports quite a bit, and seems like a really, really good police department. In fact, a couple years ago, I remember seeing an article about a very selfless state police, a trooper from Illinois, who was actually on his way home from work. So he was off shift, and there was a driver, I think a drunk driver, coming the opposite way, driving the wrong way on the highway, which is always just a terrible situation. And they knew that there was a bunch of traffic behind them, so the trooper drove their vehicle right into the path of this wrong way driver, and it killed the trooper. Wow. But they did it deliberately in order to stop the driver to protect innocent civilians. And there's a lot of controversy around police departments and police officers and government in general, and we're actually going to dig into that a little bit probably next week, because there's some allegations of corruption within our own police department here where we host our podcast, which is upsetting, but if it's true, it needs to be brought to light. But we very much respect the men and women who wear the badge and actually take seriously their oath to serve and protect and to put the citizens of the United States and the Constitution above their own personal desires and needs, and to do that for a living. And there are some great people out there like that. And this Illinois State Police officer was one of them. Anyway, that was a weird, you know, not weird, but it was a very serious tangent right off the bat. But I think it's worth mentioning. We're not just bootlickers and brown nosers here. We support people who do a good job and do it selflessly. This program uses unmarked or deceptively marked semi-trucks to spy on drivers because, of course, semi-truck drivers have an interesting vantage point, a much better vantage point of being able to see down into vehicles. And I've run a CB for most of my driving life, and I remember hearing all sorts of things from truckers. There is absolutely no filter and no FCC regulation on the CB channels. So if you want to hear some absolutely politically incorrect stuff, just get a CB radio, although there's not much chatter there anymore. But I remember specifically one trucker talking about a hot lady in the passenger seat driving by, because they can just see in, and they can see all the business if there's business to see. But the troopers are using this to their advantage, and they're using it to enforce distracted driving, which I appreciate. And of course, on this article, the comments were just pretty much everybody was just saying, oh man, this is a money grab. This is, you know, it's entrapment. It's all these different things. And my initial thought is, no, speeding enforcement is a money grab. Distracted driving, texting while driving needs to be stopped. That is very much a real danger to society. We've talked about this kind of ad nauseum on the podcast, so I won't go down that road here. But the one officer did note in one of the video interviews that distracted driving has become the number one cause of accidents, which is not a stat I've seen, but it's one I would believe, because I think it's very, very hard to measure, unlike speed, right? You can measure speed with a radar gun. You can measure speed with skid marks. You can measure it with just math, right? When two vehicles collide, like, you measure the distance that they go, and you can figure it out with physics and stuff. But like, you don't know that somebody was texting before the accident unless they admit it, or unless you like subpoena their cell phone records. But to do that for a measly car accident, like, I think there has to be a criminal case or a lawsuit in order for that to happen. So like, nobody's going to admit like, oh yeah, I was totally TikToking, that's why I hit that other car. So I like this. I wish that there was more enforcement of distracted driving. I think it's a real big problem that's only getting worse. Honestly, I would rather have like no speed limit anywhere, but unmarked cars everywhere that are observing actual driving and pulling people over for like observable things that are actually dangerous. Like, you totally cut this person off, or you're following too closely, or you can't maintain your lane, or you're totally texting on your phone or doing things that are going to potentially cause an accident. Because there's been studies where they remove the speed limit and people actually observe the situation around them and ended up driving the same speed that they would if there was a posted speed limit, because they were forced to like go, okay, well, is there a school here? Is there a lot of traffic? And they just made a value decision on their own. But now the problem is you have people that are not even observing. They're not paying attention. They have no clue what's going on.
Yeah, we've talked about it before. I see constantly people going the opposite direction of me, going left of center, not looking in front of them. You know, it's getting worse. And that to me is so much more dangerous than a lot of other things. If somebody's speeding around me, obviously that changes the calculus of the situation, but like, it's not coming into my lane.
Define speeding though, right?
Well, yeah.
Speeding is typically defined as traveling above the speed limit, but the speed limit is somewhat arbitrary.
Yes. Well, and there's been like studies done that like, if you narrow the roads, then people will slow down. So that should be something to, if you want an area for people to be more conscious of what they're doing, you narrow the lane.
But if you narrow the lane and then people are texting, you have nowhere to escape.
Well, yes, that is that doesn't count the distracted part. No, it doesn't. I don't feel like we're doing enough for distracted driving in the state of Ohio or the country. Maybe it is a severe issue.
Yeah,
find people to the moon and back. I don't like they could kill someone.
Right.
So
honestly, my dream job is like a modern day Starsky and Hutch, like vigilante. Like, I want to just put strobe lights in my Aston Martin and my Porsche and go around and just be like, you suck at driving, get off your dang phone, ticket, 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 ticket.
Oh,
that would be my dream job.
Oh, see, that's the way to make money, is just like, if you suck at driving, ticket. So many people suck.
You have to go to driving school. Speaking of driving school, this is a perfect transition. Yeah, okay. We're going to do an extra long first segment before the commercial. Ohio. An article from thecentersquare.com and the Ohio Press Network. Ohio is spending $2.5 million of taxpayer money on driving schools. It is to teach low-income teenagers how to drive. And on that bombshell, to steal a Top Gear line, let's go to commercial and we'll finish discussion after the commercial.
Switchcast is brought to you by Boxcast. Boxcast is a live streaming company based in Cleveland, Ohio, and they serve broadcasters and viewers around the world. Their founders launched Boxcast back in 2013 with one purpose, and that's to make people a part of the experience. So if you're looking to live stream your podcast, church service, car show, sporting event, wedding, or even your cannonball attempt, Boxcast is an easy and flexible live streaming platform for organizations. Boxcast is so easy, in fact, that we're broadcasting this show with a phone. So head on over to switchcars.com/boxcast to start your free trial.
If you have comments, questions, throw them in the flow of wherever you're watching live. And also, if you're listening on an audio platform, please like, subscribe, share, leave us a 5-star review if you would. It may not mean much to you, but it means a lot to us, and it means even more to the algorithms. It helps us out and helps other people find the show. We've heard so many comments about, like, man, this show is awesome. Why aren't more people listening to it? And we love that feedback, but honestly, that's partly on you. That's partly on the algorithm. So if you want more people to hear about it, well, send it to them. Leave us a review. Ohio is spending $2.5 million on driving schools. All right. So I'm about to maybe contradict myself, but potentially not. So for the last couple of weeks, I have harped on this program where Ohio is spending $500,000 on this Project Taillight program to fix underprivileged people's cars who can't afford it. And I said, this is crazy. This is dumb. The government should be doing this. But then I saw this article about driving schools, and I'm like, yes, we need more driver's education. Drivers are terrible. This is fantastic. I am so glad they're doing this. And then I stopped myself in my tracks and went, wait a minute. What do I actually believe? So the article says that they're going to spend $2.5 million in taxpayer money to teach low-income teenagers how to drive. The Drive to Succeed scholarship program handed out grants to 35 school districts and government agencies to provide driver training scholarships to eligible teen drivers across the state. It's one of the problems. They're giving government money to other government agencies. So that's there's just the start of the problem. The program started in 2022 to help teenage drivers whose families can't afford the cost of a driving school. It's the second round of funding. The first covered 25 local agencies with $575,000. It's another typical government thing, is what starts as a good thing just burgeons and becomes, let's amplify this with more and more and more money. Our esteemed governor, Mike DeSwine, said this program is already helping hundreds of teens learn skills to be safer drivers, and we are happy to help even more young people receive driver training. So the money went to the Educational Service Center of Eastern Ohio, Toledo Public Schools, Washington Local Schools, Grove City Police Department, Educational Service Center of Central Ohio, Southwestern City Schools, and the Whitehall Police Department. Knox County Health Department got $142,000. I don't know what the Knox County Health Department has to do with driving. I would think this money would go to driving schools.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know where that's at. I guess that could be an area where that's where the driving school is for whatever. I don't know. If I don't want to be rude, but that could be in a smaller part of Ohio where there's less. buildings, less organizations and such.
This is my underlying problem with government doing things, is it has to be filtered through so many government agencies, but that by the time it gets to the person in need, it's been whittled down to almost nothing. It costs so much for the government to do this. There was a lot of flack about this program based on the cost itself and basically like driving schools trying to milk the program. And somebody chimed in the comments section, which is comment sections are always dangerous on the internet, but somebody who owned a driving school gave some perspective and they said, you know, obviously the cost of this program is going up, but of course, you know, it's not driving schools getting rich off of this program, which I believe because it's not even going to driving schools, it's going to government agencies, but like their costs went up. But this lady mentioned something interesting. Driver training it goes along with the expectation of parents and students to have everything in days and nothing else or no one else matters. Talking about the Amazon society where everything's like on demand instant. She said she has parents openly admitting to doing their child's 24-hour online classroom training and or the students just click through it and don't actually like watch the training. In most cases, we have to retrain students. Many students get no behind-the-wheel experience or help from their parents. It's getting worse every year. So this is something that is needed. But to stay consistent with my beliefs, it's like, okay, how should this be done? My thought is that there is an economic component to all of these things, right? Like, yes, we're talking safety. We want to have less traffic deaths. We want to have less accidents. We want to make the world a safer place. But there's a number to all of this. There's a number to everything. Everything can be measured in economics. Even when you talk about like hospitals and life support and nursing homes and everything, there's this ongoing ethical discussion in the medical world of like, what is the cost of a life? So what is the cost of a life on the road? And when I think about it from a business perspective, from a free market perspective, I think about it and go, okay, who can benefit from this? For me, I think the insurance companies can benefit from it. So I think the job of the government should be to legislate, to oversee, not to spend money. The government has gotten way too big for its britches because it thinks it is spending its own money and it can control things with its money and it is beneficial and it is philanthropic. When it's not giving out its own money, it's giving out other people's money. So I believe strongly, like if I was the czar of America, I would just mandate that everybody had to go through advanced driver training and do it every 5 years. Like you would have to go through continuing education. You would have to pass rigorous testing to be able to drive. But who pays for that? I would mandate it, but I don't think the government should pay for it. I think insurance companies, if they really knew what was good for them, they would be paying for young drivers to go to driving school and advanced driving school because ultimately it will reduce their claim levels. We have an epidemic here in America now where insurance companies are going bust left and right because they can't handle the level of claims that they're receiving. Now, a lot of that is due to, you know, natural disasters in places like Florida, but it's not just that. There's a lack of tort reform. There's massive settlements happening. Like, it's a real big problem. So if the insurance companies knew it was good for them, they go, oh, wait, so we can spend $1,000 per kid and send them to advanced driving school and then have them as a client for the next 10, 20, 30 years and greatly reduce the risk of their claims? Heck yeah, we'll do it. I would think that would be a great investment from a business perspective. So I'd love to see something like that happen. Is it going to? Probably not. The government's going to do it instead, but the government's not even doing a great job of it. So that would be my like free market solution to this. Again, I love the idea of subsidizing driving school and getting people to go to driving school. But this isn't the way to do it. It's just going to get lost in government red tape. Andy Wilson, director of the Ohio Department of Public Safety, was quoted in the end of this article, and he said, quote, "We know about half of Ohio teens obtain their driver's license before they turn 18, which means they completed the mandatory requirements for licensure under Ohio law. So before you're 18, you have to go through driver's ed or driving school or whatever. And after 18, you can just go and take your written test and get your license, which is even more friggin' scary." He said, quote, "But the other half who wait to get licensed are more likely to be involved in a crash the first year they have a license. This is proof that driver training makes a difference."
I think that's one of the scariest things. So I haven't thought about this since I was 16, because I wanted my license so bad. As soon as I turned 15 and a half, I got my temporary permit. I took the class as soon as I could. I was like, I want to be on the road. I completely forgot that if you wait till you turn 18, none of that is required. And for some reason, this magical age of 18, because you can buy cigarettes, means that you can operate a multi-thousand-pound vehicle on roadways with other people. That was like shocking to me to read, because I just, again, I haven't thought about it. That is what should be fixed. If they're going to put money into this, if they're going to do, you know, I agree that I think subsidizing this is the right move so that everybody can get the education required to operate a motor vehicle. I said a while ago that like driving isn't necessarily a right, but our society has structured itself in a way that requires it. So it's a weird gray area. So mandate the education, subsidize it somehow, the details of which I
don't subsidize.
Whatever.
No.
Well, but somehow make it so everybody can.
Right.
Through some assistance, if they need it, learn how to drive properly. And this all like, this is a weird timing to read this because 2 or 3 weeks ago, we talked about some app that is supposed to make things way easier for people to get an education, which completely removes the need for these, what this
right.
whole program is for. Which,
I know that was Ohio was rolling yeah. that out too, right? Like, oh, they don't need driving school. The parents can just do it with this app,
which is the wrong answer. And I was like, well, is it $2.5 million to pay the developers of the app or like, what's going on? Like I... Get rid of the app, make it go away.
Yikes. Yikes. Yeah, it's all jacked up. Speaking of safety, there's an article out that says self-driving cars are banned in British Columbia. And I skimmed the article, I will admit. But the basis of the article or the basis of this reason was that they said, this is a safety concern. They are not ready to be on public streets. And I kind of laughed because I'm like, well, neither are 18-year-old teenagers. Yeah, but
most of the people on the road.
It's also funny on the heels of the autonomous cross-country record last week from with Jay and Gypsy Roberts. And then essentially hours before our podcast, Jay Roberts and Mason Dibley then turned around and did the autonomous vehicle record, which nobody had done yet. So the first one is a record, but they went from San Diego to Jacksonville, the shortest distance between the Atlantic and Pacific Ocean. So they did that about 97.5% autonomous. So three different people or three total people went across the country both ways in autonomous vehicles perfectly safely, but British Columbia is not ready for that. Another interesting point of discussion that came up on a different note, but talking about free market economy, in a dealership forum online, somebody asked a compelling question to spur discussion that said, what are some of the biggest problems that car dealerships are facing? Now, there's a bajillion answers to that, but somebody... answer to the equivalent of dealerships are in this race to the bottom. They're whoring out their cars and the salesmen are not building any value into them. And then they went on to say that during COVID that the dealers had customers trained to pay MSRP above. And now the salesmen are terrible at their job because they're just ready and waiting with a discount in order to sell a car. And that's the problem. Now, this is a dealership forum, so of course all the dealers are essentially on the same page, except me. I'm the idiot in there with the unpopular opinion. But this opinion was unpopular on both sides, right? So this is essentially this mindset that this guy had is the opposite of what every Corvette curmudgeon thought about the quote unquote greedy Steelerships back in the last few years when they were charging over MSRP for Corvettes. And you go on like any Corvette forum or anything, and it's just like it's vitriol and hatred for any flippers or any greedy dealers charging above MSRP. And I defended the dealers back then and said, it's not the greedy dealers. It is supply and demand. They are only charging above MSRP because people are willing to pay for it. The dealers cannot make up a number and say, you all have to charge this. Number one, it would be collusion if they all got together and did it. But there are too many dealers. No, there's always going to be one dealer that's going to say, screw you guys. I'm going to sell cars for what I can sell them for. But the market determines it. It doesn't matter what flippers do. BMW M4 GTS was a perfect example of that. 50% of the cars ordered, give or take, were flippers, and the cars were selling under MSRP. So the flippers didn't define the market. The buyers defined the market. But now we're experiencing the same thing. It's not the dealers. It's not that the salesmen are giving up gross because they stink at their job. A salesman can't build in value to a vehicle that the manufacturer hasn't, right? Dealers are giving up gross because supply and demand determines pricing. It did 2 years ago when everything was above sticker, and it does now when stuff is below sticker. So it's the age old thing of supply and demand. There is a point to this. We all know that's a thing, even though a lot of people still hate flippers. But I think the problem itself, the root of the problem, is in this quote unquote MSRP. MSRP stands for manufacturer's suggested retail price. But I think it should be done away with. I think MSRP is like speed limits. They make everyone angry on all sides of things because they're a fixed number, but they're arbitrary in how they're enforced and applied. So you think about speed limits. Speed limit 65. Everybody's going 75 to 80. 90 to 100 if you're in Florida. 55 to 40 if you're in Nashville area. But you have these people driving in the left lane going 70, going, well, I'm going 5 over, that's enough. And they get mad at the people behind them going faster. Then the people behind them get mad because they're blocking the lane. And everyone's going, well, I'm going the speed limit. Well, you're not going fast enough. Well, you shouldn't be speeding. But the cops aren't enforcing unless you're going at least 10 to 15 over or 100 plus in Florida. So it's like because of this arbitrary enforcement, you have everybody mad. Because they're looking at the number, but then not. So the same thing is with MSRP, right? You have people selling above MSRP because of the demand, and everybody gets pissed off at the dealers. But then when the shoe's on the other foot, somehow that rule doesn't apply, right? Oh, I want a discount because that's what I can get a discount this other dealer. All of a sudden, the customer applies supply and demand to the equation, which they should, but they don't when it's over sticker. But then the dealers get angry because they can't hold gross and everybody wants a discount. And while they're fighting with other dealers who are just, you know, giving away the farm. So the manufacturer should either set MSRP and change it to manufacturer's fixed pricing, call it MFP. That could also be like a rapper, you know. It should be MFP and speed limits should be speed limits and they should be enforced not a mile an hour over or you get a ticket. I would hate that, but I'm just saying if they want us to take this seriously, the number should be the number, or it should just not exist at all. Both speed limits and MSRP. Just let the dealer set pricing. Show them an invoice, but don't publish it, and let the market determine or let the dealer determine or whatever. Leave it open. That's my if I were king of the world solution to that.
I feel like I've been mulling this over, and I think without like guidance for a new car, you know, it could create some level of chaos where people eventually it would equalize And I guess you could use history of a model of similar position in the lineup and desirability to kind of guess, because each dealer would be setting their own pricing, right? In yeah. your world. So they would have to figure it out.
TrailX does that. We're a dealer for TrailX aluminum trailers, and they do not publish pricing. They have dealer pricing, and then they have a suggested markup, but they do not publish pricing.
Hmm.
There's no published retail pricing.
Yeah, I think that could work. I think this also just comes down to everybody likes to get a deal. Everybody likes to think that they won it over on somebody, which is, I think, maybe the root of this problem. Because the people that really want the cars, for whatever reason, if they're an enthusiast, they'll get it.
Everybody likes to feel like they yes. got a deal.
Yes. No, that's an important clarification.
Yes. But that's when it comes into this negotiation. So if they have fixed price, if you do away with negotiation, then you do away with that sentiment, right? Because there's 100 other things that are fixed price that nobody complains about, because they just know, well, I can't negotiate on it. So then it comes into, if you have fixed price, then the onus goes to the salespeople and the manufacturers and the advertising agencies to actually build value into the product, because people have to be willing to go in there and pay the price. And then it becomes about selling the product, not about selling the price.
Hmm. I mean, the product is what's most important. It's what actually matters. But I also think, too, like, I'm not somebody who wants to negotiate. I've purchased a couple of cars in my time, and I've never really negotiated anything because I was like, the price this person
because
wants,
it was green.
Well, okay. I don't put myself in a position to negotiate, because what I want, there's like five of everything that I want. So if it comes
Tyler,
out...
Tyler calls up the dealer, and all the dealer hears is...
green. No, but I also don't call until I'm like, you know what? The price they're asking is fair. I'm willing to pay this price for this thing, assuming I go through our steps that we've talked about, so I feel safe purchasing the car. I'm confident as I can be, and then that's what it is. I'm not trying to haggle over $500. Like, just give me the dang car, because it's green.
We should ask Hank. We should ask Hank what he thinks about this next week.
Yeah. Switchcast is also brought to you by Celebrity Machines. Celebrity Machines offers more than 250 different screen-accurate license plates, as they've appeared in movies and TV shows, such as Back to the Future, Ghostbusters, The Fast and the Furious, Breaking Bad, and so many more. Celebrity Machines also makes our dealer insert plates, as well as our commemorative 2539 plates from the fastest cannonball run ever. Visit CelebrityMachines.com for more info and use promo code SWITCHCAST to save 25.39% at checkout.
Should go to celebritymachines.com. But our dealer insert plates are available on nutsforsticks.com. Celebrity Machines does not resell those. They provide them to us. But if you're a dealer looking for quality aluminum plate inserts, you should check out celebritymachines.com and get your bulk order on those.
Heck yeah, I didn't know you were letting people buy that now.
Oh yeah, we have been for a long time.
Maybe I should visit nutsforsticks.com.
Yes,
once in a while.
Yes, you should. We have a new product up on nutsforsticks.com. Speaking of sellout, this is defining sellout. I make fun of people all the time, Corvette people, et cetera, who are, you know, down to the my car is one of one because of specific options. Well, I am selling out officially. Nuts for Sticks offers a GT Vault Porsche. Not Porsche, sorry. GT Vault, one of certificate for Porsche 996 and 997 GT models. I can't lead with Porsche because that would imply that it is a Porsche thing, right? Was it the Singer Porsche 911 reimagined by Singer? Well, this is a certificate about a Porsche by GT Vault. Anyway, so if you have a Porsche 996 or 997 GT car and you want the most accurate information on how many were made in your color or options or whatever, you can go to nutsforsticks.com and you can get that certificate, display it at car shows, PCA, Concours, whatever you want. Use it to get into exclusive shows because your interior as a more special leather than somebody else's. Anyway, I can't even say it.
Look, gray leather is really rare, Doug. It makes it special.
I like my options, but I don't go around. I have a midnight blue over cocoa 911 C4. I rarely see C4s at all, let alone midnight blue on cocoa. It is probably a one of one. I don't care. I've never looked it up. I've never told somebody this is a really rare combo. I look at it and go, ooh, this is pretty. I like it.
Yeah.
It's whatever. Other people enjoy things differently. If your method of enjoyment is to, you know, tell people how rare it is, that's cool too. Give me your money and I'll help you out with that. I'll give you an official certificate.
I wasn't on the cocoa train until we went to Amelia, but man, that is a very nice interior color.
It is. It is. It's softer leather too. The special leather is actually a little bit like softer and more supple than the regular full leather so package. Good. So anyway, it's also more rare. Shrewd negotiator. Tyler, why don't you lead us off with this one while I find our other one? We got two really shrewd negotiators this week.
Well, I'm not sure. Well, you know what? I'll just start. I'll let you be the judge of this. I will just read it to you. So we have from Facebook Marketplace, a 2014 Nissan Altima.
Is it stolen?
Well, I don't. We'll find out. We're going to find out together with the listeners.
Is there still a loan on it that's in default?
First thing in the description, title is rebuilt. Appreciate the honesty.
Oh, yeah.
Presenting the Nissan Altima 2014, a reliable sedan in classic black with
except
a mileage.
Except for the CVT.
Well, yeah. Engine's fine. With a mileage of 206,000 miles.
Wow.
How many CVTs do you think
they've
gone
through? Probably 5.
priced at $4,800. This vehicle offers exceptional value for its performance and features. What performance does a Nissan Altima have?
Have you seen any of the police chase videos? Are you kidding me?
Going like 100 miles an hour down the highway on 3 donuts.
Incredible performance. They can bounce off other cars and still lose the cops.
Though it has been well driven, obviously, it still holds immense potential.
Not that well. They crashed it to the point it needed rebuilt.
It's worth noting that there was a minor bumper fix, but beyond that, this Altima is ready to hit the road with confidence.
I bet it's ready to hit a lot of things.
Say, hopefully not anybody else. Don't miss out on this opportunity to own a dependable car at an unbeatable price.
Okay. I just want to say, as much fun as we make fun of Nissan Altimas, whoever's selling this is better than every single Porsche ad I've seen in the last, like since we started this podcast.
Oh, 100%.
How many Porsche ads have we looked at where they go all the way down? This car is amazing. It's got a rare interior. Look at all these options. It's maintained without expense. By the way, it has a rebuilt title.
Yeah, I love the honesty right at the beginning. I love that they're trying not to regale you of the history of the Nissan Altima and the Nissan brand and why this specific engine.
They did use the word opportunity, though. That is a Porsche thing. But yeah, they put it right out at the front. Title's rebuilt. If you're not interested in a rebuilt title, keep on scrolling.
Yeah, I feel like,
and you know, with a Nissan Altima, I feel like that's almost something to be assumed. With a Porsche, like, come on. I mean, There's people that won't even look at a car that's had one panel painted, let alone the title refinished, you know. So I feel like most Porsche people could take a lesson from this Nissan Altima seller.
I think so. Also, can we be depressed for a moment? I'm going to be old man yelling at Cloud, I think, for a little bit here. It's so depressing that an Altima with 200,000 miles is still somehow worth $5,000.
And
to
a
somebody.
Rebuilt title.
And a rebuilt title. How is this not like a $1,500 car?
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. Like, moment of silence. Goodness. Moment of silence for the cheap car. The death of the cheap car. Okay.
Question of the week is brought to you by Nuts for Sticks. For those of you that don't know, Nuts for Sticks is a brand celebrating the manual transmission in all of its forms. Forget the flappy paddles, we like shifting ourselves. Check out our fun and funny stick theme shirts at nutsforsticks.com and save 10% on your order using the discount code SWITCHCAST. That is nutsforsticks.com and use code SWITCHCAST. We've got a couple questions of the week here, Doug, and they've been submitted to us on switchcast.live. Why don't you tell our lovely listeners what switchcast.live is?
Oh, it's the greatest place to not only send us questions, but sign up for email updates and get all the latest information on this podcast. It is the hub for all of your Switchcast podcast information.
And we love answering questions from folks who have submitted on Switchcast. They're like the realest of the real. They're our close-knit family.
The realest of the real are the super chats, but you know, donate button on Switchcast.live. We need a sponsorship button. Remember that guy, the Prince Mobry?
Mobry Destined,
and he had sponsorship options on his site. I had forgotten about this, but it was in our highlight episode a couple weeks ago, and his default sponsorship option was $100,000. I think we should try that on Switchcast.
See, I thought about this, but Doug, I am so concerned that so many people are going to be flocking to that form that it's going to crash the server. So so many people are chomping at the bit
to send us $100,000.
Yeah, I got to hold off for a while.
Okay.
Well, I would like to get to Evan's question here. if we're done,
Not.
All right, Evan W. from Switchcast.live wants to know.
You expect us to take this seriously?
I bought my C6 in. There you go. Doug. For those of you listening, Doug put a serious face on. I bought my C6 in 2021, and it has been a great track car. I bought a base model, so after I installed Z06 rear panels with larger wheels, Z06 sway bars, shocks, and oil cooler, it either got a lot better on the track, or the car got better at dealing with my lack of talent. Not sure which. But here's my question.
Usually adding performance is not a good way to deal with lack of talent, but okay.
I'd like to upgrade my car going into the next season. I figured the C7 would be the logical next step, but when I drove one, it felt like my C6 put on a winter coat. It felt too big. That's what she said. That's in the question. In parentheses. So if you were going to move from a C6 to another car that you take to the gym and track 10 to 11 times a year, what would you pick? I'm not brand loyal, and I like to get into a car for sub 45K. What are your top three?
I mean, a C6 is a good drive to the gym car. I feel like it's a good stereotypical like meathead car.
Oh, yeah.
Beaten only by the Viper and the Hummer H1.
I'm going to get out of that. Just get absolutely yoked, my guy.
Right.
Let's go.
Get out with your protein shake and your like shaved, shiny head that reflects better than your car's paint.
And you make the loudest noises for your reps to let everybody know that you're like really getting into it.
My sister had a friend in college one time that was a bodybuilder, and she was very much a runner at the time, and she would ask him to go running, and he said, and he was serious, he was not saying this sarcastically, he said, "I can't run, my muscles get in the way."
I think that's how you know you got enough muscle.
I would like to be able to answer that because I hate running. I'd like for that to be my answer. But unfortunately, I'm the lanky type with long legs that actually was pretty fast. But anyway, what was the question? C6 upgrade. Okay, well.
Top three under 45K.
Number one upgrade. You call this out yourself, as you said, the lack of your driving ability. The best mod you can do in a car is to upgrade the nut that's between the driver's seat and the steering wheel. So before I would upgrade in car, I'll let you get a couple minutes to get that. But before I would upgrade the car, I would go to a bunch of driving schools and just get better. And I think that helps you determine what you want out of an upgrading car. You may find things about the car that you have that's awesome, or you may find weaknesses that you go, okay, now I realize where my car is weak or why the C7 feels like a winter coat. I mean, anytime you upgrade a car well and then go to a stock model, it's going to feel crappy. Like I've got an awesome C5 that's set up really well. And every time I get into a stock C6, I'm like, it feels like, you know, I went from a Tempur-Pedic mattress to a waterbed. Like it's floaty. But top three cars under 45 grand. I mean, one of them honestly would be a C6 Z06. But even that is not great for track duty because I think the brakes suck and the suspension kind of sucks. It's very twitchy. So I would upgrade those two things right off the bat anyway. Honestly, like a, I don't think you can get into a Porsche 981 Boxster / Cayman for that money. You might be able to get into a base one for that money, but I'd do like a 987.2 Boxster Cayman. Or if you can stretch your buddy a budget, a really ratty 987 Boxster Spider or Cayman R. So, I mean, that's...
Yeah, I think for track duty.
Yeah.
If Cayman R's can even be had with, you know, super tracked and high miles for that amount of money, they're depressingly expensive now.
Yeah.
I remember when they were like $50,000 cars.
But miles hurt those cars because you got the collectors chasing them. So if you find a 70,000-mile track modified Cayman R, then you can probably get one for sub 50 grand. I would think. True. I would hope. Yeah.
Was that three?
I don't know. Boxster Spider and Cayman R too.
Yeah, those are very, the same car. Those are different. One's got a roof.
I don't know. Or no, the third one is the driver mod. Go to driving schools and keep your car.
So. All right. We've got another question of the week also from switchcast.live. This is from Shannon K. Most enthusiasts have a daily driver and one or more fun cars. We typically spend substantially more money on the fun cars and less on the daily. We spend most of our time driving the daily while the fun car sits on a tender. Maybe some of you. Would it make more sense to spend more on a nicer daily since we spend the majority of our time in it and spend less on the fun car? Who hurt you, Shannon? Are you okay?
Ouch. I mean, my answer to that is I just daily my fun car.
Yeah.
Like, I have a 997, and I've just made the choice that, okay, it's going to get rusty, and it's going to get dirty, but it is fun every day because I have, like, 60 years of driving life, and half of that's cut out by winter, so it's like, okay, well, I'm just going to enjoy every moment. I'm not going to spend more on a daily. I'm just going to use the fun car as a daily. However impractical it may be.
100%. That's what I mean. Now, granted, I do put my Porsche away in the wintertime, but I love my daily. But
then
I
you
also
drive your other Porsche, Mr. Bougie.
No, jeez. I don't need two.
Way
I need to
be
get rid
out
of one.
Of touch, Tyler.
No. One of them needs to go.
It's not going to, though. Is
but
it?
Ethan, who plugged his mic in? But no, I think like, rain or shine, as long as there's not salt on the road, I'm driving my fun car mostly. And I just think it's easier to live life like that. Maybe not easier, and like sometimes.
No, it's
repairs.
Easier to live life like Ethan, our producer, and just have a Nissan Murano, and you just don't care.
I care. I care.
Not enough to get a real car.
So okay, I will say again, I drive a Nissan Murano, so take everything I'm about to say with a grain of salt. Hey, it gets me to point A to point B comfortably with a heated seat. Whatever. I feel like the premise of that question is that, so I spend my time around like car guys like you two, so I understand how you think, I understand that worldview, but the car guy archetype that you see on TikTok and what have you is the embodiment of that question. It's the thing in the garage it's the thing that never sees the light of day, whatever
sure.
It is. But I feel like the premise of her question is, or their question is, overlooking the potential for the individuals, the enthusiasts who actually drive and appreciate the cars like everyone in this room does. So I feel like we're kind of missing that within this whole the point of view that the question is coming from. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I think there's also something to be said in the automotive community where people will, like it or not, we want kind of respect and or status within the car community or from our coworkers. So a lot of people will spend more on their daily driver. Like, you know, I'm going to buy a Porsche Cayenne GTS because my 911's in the garage, but I still want to be a car person. And so you overspend on a daily driver. Is it a real sports car? No. Is it any better than a Nissan Murano and an Acura MDX. On paper, yes. Is it fast around the Nürburgring? Yes. But does it do any better for you on the way to work and picking up your kids for school? Absolutely not. It just, it satisfies your own inner car person quota of like, okay, I'm being a car guy because I have a Porsche Cayenne GTS as my daily driver, as opposed to a Nissan Murano.
Right. Sure.
So I think there's something to that as yes. well.
Yeah.
And I've just gone to the other extreme and went like, oh, because I've had the best SUV possible. And I'm like, this still sucks because it's still an SUV. So I'm just going to lean into it and go, screw it. I'm going to have a 911 as my daily driver. And I'm going to have a truck in the background for when I need a truck to do truck things. And only when I need it to do that. Yeah. But the fundamental, like 97% of my driving is something I can do with a fun car versus I think people kind of like think like, oh, well, I have to carry my kids or go to the grocery store or do all these other things. And so they compromise and get an SUV. And I'm like, I can do all of those things with a 911, yeah. all of them.
I've got a buddy of mine that is looking for a car and he loves wagons. And so he's been looking at like the Buick Regal Torx. And he's like, I really like how they look. I really want this. But he's got a kid and he's got a house. And he's like, I don't know. I've been looking at these other cars, like a minivan and an SUV. And his one thing that he said to me multiple times is, I can fit a sheet of plywood in those. And I was like, how many times a year do you need to take a sheet of plywood anywhere? I know you own a house. I know kids have a lot of stuff. Spend $20 at Home Depot to rent their pickup truck, bring your plywood home, and then continue driving the car you actually want.
Well, the F-150 is the highest selling vehicle in America, yeah. right? So it's like, clearly a lot of people are hauling crap around all the time.
No, they're not. Short beds. They're
that's true.
You know, they
that's true.
Six they people and have a 3-foot bed. You can put more plywood in the cargo area than you can in the cargo area.
I didn't think that people were moving that stuff around on the daily.
They're not.
I was wrong.
No, it's a bunch of bougies friggin' paying their contractor to pick up the plywood.
Everybody wants an SUV or a truck because they think they need this thing to haul all this stuff. If you want it because you enjoy trucks or you enjoy SUVs, more power to you. Drive what you want. I just hate the argument of, well, I need to carry this thing one time a year and it's just easier to spend $50,000 more on this
thing.
Well,
but SUVs have less cargo area yeah. than any wagon. They have terrible cargo capacity.
Oh, well, yeah.
So that's not even an argument.
As the proud owner of an SUV here, I will say,
it's a crossover.
It's a crossover.
It's a hatchback with a lift
kit. It is a crossover. It is very much a crossover in the SUV type. I am over it.
It's a Taltima. Come on. Yeah.
No, I'm done with
Taltima.
It.
Taltima.
I am marking 8:55 p.m. on the 24th of April as the first time that our producer, Ethan, has given automotive advice on the podcast.
What did I say?
New, you were advising
yeah.
people.
We got them all torqued off. Well, talking about his
my personal experience with my Murano is the crossover SUV vehicle body style is not, it's overhyped. That's the only
That's
advice
true.
I will
you
tell
You need
people.
The crossover convertible.
That is undervalued. Yes. It is, yes.
Investment quality. Rare. Only going up.
Murano cross cab.
Is that
for
prescriptive?
Ethan.
Prescriptive.
Murano cross cab for Ethan. So I forgot the other shrewd negotiator coming back full circle here. There was an inquiry on a Ford Raptor to a dealership, to a salesman. And it started out with the ubiquitous, hello, is this still available?
Love that question.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's the default question that Facebook fills in for you. So they said, yes, it's available. The buyer, we shouldn't call him a buyer. The inquirer said, do you like doing good?
Generally, I would say.
Right? So then he says, I want to get it. Would you accept that I pay you its value by donating my organs?
Yeah, look, okay. Now, let's be honest. There's a lot of things I do for a green GT3, but I don't know what the heck he was looking at.
I mean, maybe he's an ex-musician, right? And he's got pipe organs, but those are worthless at this point. Absolutely worthless.
Large.
Around the value of accordions. Very large. They would not fit in the back of a modern pickup truck with a 3-foot bed.
Oh, my goodness.
I learned recently, this is not legal advice, this is just something I learned. That would technically be an illegal transaction. That is organ trafficking. That is a felony.
Wouldn't it just be easier for that? Maybe not easier. They should take the responsibility of selling their organs for cash to then buy the car. Why would they put that responsibility on your shoulders? You're a car dealer, not an organ dealer.
I don't know.
How are you going to offload? How would you offload that?
I don't know. The question is, when I first saw this, my first question is like, aren't your most valuable organs like when you're not alive?
Probably, I would say.
So,
my heart's kind of important.
I know you can donate like liver and kidney and stuff like that, but I don't know. I don't know if there's enough value in those to.
Yikes!
Are you even the same blood type? And like, how does a car dealer resell organs?
They don't come with a Carfax. As is they where might. Is.
Biden did the whole digital medical record things. I think. So
it's not like we have. Oh, I guess we do have social security numbers. It's like a VIN. Anyway, let's move. This has gone down.
You
got to
really pump up the value of those.
Oh my goodness.
Oh man, it's we're gonna skip the Scaminaire tonight. Well, it's too much to unpack for that one. So we're running out of time. So we're gonna go right to the props and flops.
As always, the props and flops are brought to you by Switch Cars. And Switch Cars is the enthusiast's dealership where we buy, sell, consign, service, and store only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com. And Doug, what is our pick of the week from inventory?
It is a 1991 Acura NSX. Oh. That is first year car. Timeless design, incredibly reliable. It's finished in Sebring silver over black with just 15,000 miles, fresh timing belt and water pump service, and the car is completely covered in paint protection film. It is not cheap, but it is very, very nice. You can get more details on that on switchcars.com.
It's got the chunky wheels, like those chunky five spokes. I love them.
Yes.
A lot of people probably hate them because they're small and 90s and whatever, but I feel like they're perfect.
Our flop of the week is from Road and Track. A dealership employee reportedly wrecks Ferrari F40 in tunnel. Well, there's pictures of it, so that I think the wreck happened, but they got to cover their butts there.
Wreck confirmed who it did.
A German luxury car dealer, Mechatronic, which I... Follow them on Instagram. They have some amazing stuff.
Yes.
Really incredible stuff. Anyway, they entrusted this Ferrari F40 to a 24-year-old employee to drive it to a nearby car show. And the young driver crashed a vintage Ferrari in a tunnel. Now, it doesn't look terrible. It's mostly front-end damage, but I'm sure the carbon fiber tub up front will have to have some work. And that's always expensive and difficult. Not much else is known about this accident, but the car was listed for $3.2 million on their website prior to this accident taking place. So I have a feeling there will be a little bit of diminished value given the accident.
Yikes. They are the ones doing that, those old SLs. Where they shove a modern engine in.
I very much like those, except they're still automatics.
Oh, so cool.
Yep. Now, I do want to say something about... Everybody's going to jump to conclusions here, as I did, right? The headline or the sub-headline is the 24-year-old employee, right? Age implies that you have no clue what you're doing. I started this business when I was 20 years old. I didn't wreck any exotic cars at that age. A lot of our employees are sub 30 years old, and I've instilled in them responsibility. But things happen, right? Like he may have hit a wet spot on the road. The tires might have been super old. Like we have no idea. He may not have been being irresponsible. I think there's this thing with age, right? People advertise their Corvettes and Porsches for sale, and they're like, you know, mature old owner, whatever, as if that means you know how to drive. It doesn't mean anything. So I don't want to jump on this kid just because he's a kid. Like, we've all been 24, and many of us had opportunities to drive amazing cars or didn't, and we took it seriously, but things can happen. So, you know, it happened, but still sucks. So, it's our flop of the week. Our prop of the week, new motorcycle cannonball record. That's right.
You got a new record 2 weeks in a row?
This is only one subcategory or whatever, one qualifier. But I think the motorcycle cannonball is a thing that should have its own category and very much does have its own category, because you have to have a butt made of friggin' stainless steel in order to do something like this. Like, that is totally different than doing it in a car. It has to be solo, so don't claim the solo motorcycle cannonball record unless you go friggin' nut to butt the whole entire way, which would be a whole different challenge. That might be worse than going solo.
Just one? Just nut?
It's a saying, okay? Not all Harley owners are cancer survivors. Anyway.
That's a good call out there.
32 hours, 32 minutes done last week by Bo Ernest. Allegedly, of course, you know. Very well documented, allegedly. Although there's a little bit of a twist to this that I think is worth calling out. So according to the Wikipedia, 32 hours and 27 minutes was done back in October 1st. So a difference of 5 minutes. For a deep cannonball reference, ask the Boston Brawlers how they feel about 5 minutes. Anyway, there is zero information about this other claimed 32-hour, 27-minute run. No sources cited on Wikipedia, just that paragraph. And he claims it was on a 1,000cc, I think it was a Hayabusa motorcycle, essentially like a full race bike. And it was a professional racer from Germany. So it's some of the details are kind of like, well, I'm not so sure about that. But you know, it's on Wikipedia. So as Michael Scott would say, Wikipedia is the best thing ever. Anyone in the world can write anything about they want about any subject. So you know you are getting the best possible information. But what have we learned from? Well, just our discussions a couple weeks ago and earlier throughout the podcast about claiming a record and having the subsequent proof. Anybody can put a claim out there, but unless you have proof to it, it ain't a record. So one paragraph on Wikipedia in my book doesn't count, and I don't think anyone else is going to take it seriously either. So we are saying, not that we have any holy anointing on who has a cannonball record or not, but we're gonna say that this 32-hour, 30-minute run is the new motorcycle cannonball record. And I know there's been a lot of competition for that record over the last decade, a lot of people chasing it, and a lot of people not chasing it, because that's just a mental, physical feat of humanity that is something I will never, ever, ever even consider doing. I don't even have my motorcycle license, so that goes without saying. But anyway, shout out to Bo Ernest for doing it safely, for doing it swiftly, and for having the proper documentation to back up his claim. Our hats off to you. Our helmets off to you. I don't know. Visors up. What do motorcyclists do?
I don't know.
Anyway, thank you for joining us all tonight. If you have questions, we will address them in the bonus round of Tip Talk, available exclusively for our live viewers. For you and everyone else, thank you for joining us. Thank you to my co-host Tyler Sanders, our producer Ethan Huffnagel, our sponsors Boxcast, Nuts for Sticks, Switch Cars, Celebrity Machines, Parallel Printworks, and Stephen Holm Woodworking. Our bumper music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. This episode will be available next Monday in audio format wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday at 8 p.m. as we look forward to edifying, educating, and entertaining you on the drive of your life.